ಸರಿ ಓ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಬಂದಿಗೆ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋ ಗೋಪಿನಾಥ್ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಕಂಡು ಹರಿಕೊಂಡಿಗೆ ಗೋಪದನ್ ಗೀತೆ ಶ್ರೀ ವೃಂದಾವಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ನಭಿ ಮಯ ಬೋಧಾಮ್ ಗೀತೆ ಗಂಗ ಮಯಿ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಗಮಲ ಮಯಿ ಕಿ
ಜಯ
ಭಕ್ತಿ ದೇವಿ ಕಿ
ಜಯ
ತುಳಸಿ ದೇವಿ ಕಿ
ಜಯ
ಸಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಬಂದಿಗೆ All glories to Samudhavati, all glories to Samudhavati, all glories to Samudhavati, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Thay, Guru and 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 ಓಂ ಗಿರಿಧನಂದಸ್ಯ ಜನಂಜನ ಸುಲಭಯ ಚಕ್ಷುಸ್ಮರತಂಜೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುವೇ ನಮಃ ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋವಿಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಜೈನ ಮುಖ್ಯತೆ ಸಾಯಂ ರೂಪಕಗಮಯಂ ದದತಿ ಸಾಪನ ಪಂಚಕೋಪತಿಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಸಂಯೋಗೇಭ್ಯ ಚ ಪತಿತಂ ಪಾವನೇ ಗೋವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯ But Brahma had stolen away the boys and the calves. And Krishna had expanded himself. So much time had passed, 1 year had passed, that no one could understand. And Balaram understood by the grace of Krishna. And then Lord Brahma returned. And he was astounded because Krishna, the calves and boys were still there playing with Krishna. Of course, they were Krishna's expansions, but he could not understand that. So Srila Sukadeva Goswami, we'll read two verses, and then the second verse is the last verse we read yesterday, and we'll read Prabhupada's purport to that, because it's quite long. Thus Lord Brahma, thinking and thinking for a long time, tried to distinguish between those two sets of boys, who were each separately existing. He tried to understand who was real and who was not real, but he could not understand at all. Thus, because Lord Brahma wanted to mystify the all-pervading Lord Krishna, who can never be mystified, but who on the contrary mystifies the whole universe, the entire universe, he himself was put into bewilderment by his own mystic power. I'll read that again. Thus, because Lord Brahma wanted to mystify the all-pervading Lord Krishna, what did that part of the verse say?
Trying to
picture
Krishna.
Who? Lord Brahma. Who can never be mystified. You can't trick Krishna. Can't mystify. What does mystify mean?
Bewilder.
Huh?
Bewilder.
Oh, yes. Yes, bewilder. Yes. So Krishna, he tried to bewilder the one who could not be bewildered, but who, on the contrary, mystifies the entire creation. Krishna bewilders the entire creation. Now, in what sense does Krishna mystify or bewilder the entire creation? I mean, if you ask 90.9% of the people, if they are bewildered about the creation, what will they say? They'll say, well, I don't understand it completely, perhaps, but I wouldn't say I was bewildered by it. But in what sense does Krishna bewilder or defy the entire universe, other than that sense? In what sense does Krishna mystify or bewilder the entire universe?
He bewilders people through his Maha, Maya, and the glare of Maya.
Okay, but what is the bewilderment? People don't know the purpose of life.
They don't know that they're eternal.
They don't know who they are. Mm. And what else? Antarbahir Vastatalo. Krishna is in everything. He's inside of everything and he's outside of everything. There's no place where he's not. They cannot see him anywhere. And this is actually the teaching of the Hansa avatar to the four Kumaras, Lord Brahma and the four Kumaras, but especially the four Kumaras, explaining in the 13th chapter of the 11th canto, explaining that I mentioned this previously, that if you try, you cannot separate, and this was the question that the four Kumaras asked Lord Brahma, that he could not answer. He was stunned. He could not answer it. He said, there seems to be such a combination in the mind of the sense objects and the mind and the sense objects. And these are great meditators speaking. So their experience is that even though they're trying to keep their mind in a very fixed way, the sense objects are always in their mind. So they're experiencing this problem. So they're saying that the sense objects are always in the mind, and my mind is always meditating on the sense object. It's always focusing on the sense object. Is it possible to separate the two, the mind from the sense objects? Because this is what one tries to do in meditation. But how can... Just try to imagine what your mind is like if there was no sense objects in it, if there was no hearing, nothing to hear, nothing to see, nothing to touch, nothing to smell, nothing to... What's the other one? Taste and hear. So if none of the sense objects, when you, what would be the functioning of the mind if there was none of these objects, tanmatra, objects of the subtle senses? You can't even imagine it, what it would be like, what such a mind would be like, because it wouldn't function. But that's exactly what the impersonalist meditators in both the... they're trying to have a mind that has no functioning, and that's their perfection. To have a mind that has no functioning, practically speaking, and it's not possible, practically speaking. So the question is, they ask the Hans Avatar, how can we're meditating, and somehow or another, every time we sit down to meditate, or every time, in our case, if we sit down to chant our japa and chant mantras, Sunday mantras, so many things go on in the mind that have nothing to do with what we're trying to do. Is it possible to separate those external objects from the mind? That's the question. And the Hansa Avatar said, no, they're not separable. And don't even try to separate them. And that's also what the modern scientists try to do when there's... when they're studying the phenomena of this world, they try to understand the universe, or they try to understand some molecules, and they try to see what the molecule is like independently of them looking at it. So that's the scientific, so-called objective methodology. They try to see what reality is independent of, that has nothing to do with the person observing it. Because they want an objective, just to have the object there, and they want to perceive the nature of the object. So they have their scientific methodology to attempt to do that. And the more you attempt to separate the senses from the sense object, the more you find out, first of all, it's impossible. And second of all, you find out that you don't actually understand reality at all. You understand, you become more and more foolish, in fact. So the Hansa Avatar's answer was that a great soul, he doesn't try to do this, but rather he sees the source of both. Because both the, and he adds a third element, the soul, who is the perceiver of the mind and perceiver of the objects of the senses, all three of them are energies of the Supreme Lord. So if you put your consciousness on the Supreme Lord, then you're actually understanding everything completely. And this is the prime bewilderment that Maya causes, is that although Krishna is in everything and everywhere, no one can see him in anything or anywhere. So that's specifically what Maya's function is, to give a sense of reality that has nothing to do with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This specifically is the function of Maya. So in this, and that's called illusion, because Krishna, there is no place where Krishna isn't, because he is the all-pervading, everywhere existing absolute truth. So there's no place where he doesn't, in no situation is he not present. But it takes devotion for one to perceive Krishna in every situation. And Maya's function is to cause a non-perception of Krishna, to see everything or anything or something as if it had no relationship to Krishna. And that, again, is specifically the bewilderment, how Krishna's Maya mystifies the entire universe, because although everything in existence has a relationship to the Absolute Truth, to Krishna, Maya's function is to cut the soul's consciousness from perceiving that relationship with Krishna. So that's how Prabhupada preached. He preached that this world belongs to Krishna. There's no question of renouncing the world or renunciation of the world, because how could you renounce something that doesn't belong to you? It is as if when Jimmy was walking, when he's leaving, he says, "I'm so detached, I'm going to renounce the carpet, the recorder, and not only that, I'm renouncing the microphone set too, in the house. I'm so detached, I'm renouncing." But why are some of us giggling? It's because obviously it's not yours to renounce. So because everything belongs to Krishna, our attempts at renunciation are actually worthy of being giggled at, because we are attempting to renounce something that's not ours. So Srila Rupa Goswami and his followers taught Nirbandha Sambandha Yukta Varavuchate, that everything is Krishna's. And in one sense it is Krishna, in the same way that the sunlight is the same as the sun. Everything is Krishna, Krishna's. It is the energy of the Supreme Energetic, and everything therefore should be used for his pleasure, including me. And because I am Krishna's, and this is the primary step in God consciousness and Krishna consciousness, when we cut our sense of false sense of self, our mystified sense of self, and think of ourselves as the body or so many upadis, overlays on the bodies, and just think of ourselves instead as Krishna's servant, Krishna Nityadas. So that's the first major step in spiritual life, and that's in initiation. That's basically what happens where the initiate, he gets a name that always has Das or Dasi attached to it. Krishna Das. And wearing tilak, Kunti Mala, showing that the body is a temple where Krishna lives, and the body should be kept not as a source of enjoyment, but as a source or a facility for service for Krishna. These are the prime points, foundational points of Krishna consciousness. It's so radical, actually. It sounds so simple, and we've heard it 100,000 million times already. But it's a complete change of identity to the very core of who we are, that I'm Krishna's servant. I'm not. We have so many things we're not. humbly prone, that's another patir, not be Vaishnava, that's another. I'm not anything related to this body. I'm not, nor am I anything related to my mind, nor am I anything related to the things that that are in relationship to my body and my mind, but I'm constantly and only in fact in relationship to Krishna. And that relationship is one of service. So this is, it's actually so radical, and it's actually the unbewildered condition of the situation of a soul, and it's actually difficult to do. But Prabhupada would insist it's very easy. I was listening to him speak this morning, 1966. He was just saying it's so easy. All you have to do, man mana baba mad bhakto, madhyaji mam namaskuru, mam adhiji. So all you have to do is think of Krishna, think of yourself as his devotee, worship him, and offer obeisances to him. And then Prabhupada, is that difficult? Is there something you can't do? You can't think of Krishna? So he said, it's very easy. But what is the difficulty? And that also Prabhupada would say that too, isn't that? I think that's the title of the book of Sri Kirti Prabhu. What is the difficulty? So what is the difficulty? The difficulty is we have an eternal avoidance complex of Krishna. We don't want to surrender to him. We don't want to become a servant. We have another plan. We have many other plans, in fact, of what we want to do and how we want to make our way from this world. So many plans. So this is the mystification, because we can be sure that our plans will fail. Our plans, because our body will fail. Everyone's body has its expiry date. And how just naturally, people are so attached to everything they've gained in their life, especially if one has a lot of wealth. One is especially attached to one's wealth, one's fame, because we've gained it by our hard work. We just want to hold on to it so tightly. And fate through our life conspires, makes plans to separate us from everything that we have accumulated. And then if we're successful in somehow holding on to it, then ultimately the grim reaper of death comes along. And what is this one? Where is that? I think it was in the prayers of Bhumi Devi. It's the lamentations of Bhumi Devi in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. Very, very, very powerful. See, there's a few times in the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto where it speaks about the kings and the way kings think. Because kings, in one sense, they're the most admired people in the world, even though there's, as soon as there's a king, everyone tries to pull him down. But everyone thinks the king's position is the best position of all, because he has wealth, he has power, he can do whatever he wants. If he has an enemy, he doesn't have to fight with him. It just kills him. It's really simple. He's the law. He doesn't have to bring him to court or anything. He can just off with his head, something like that. So kings are so idealized in people's minds. And we talk about the kingdom of God. And we talk about Eka Indra, Ikendra, the king of all kings. Because the kings of this world are reflections of the supreme king, the only ultimate king who has power. So Bhumi Devi is just lamenting the foolishness of kings. And although she's talking specifically about kings, monarchs, really she's talking about everyone. Because everyone in this world, we make our little kingdoms. And the kingdom is the kingdoms we make. Sometimes they're physical, sometimes they're mental. You know, someone that wants to be the authority on a particular subject in this world, and if another person comes up who is very knowledgeable, he'll try to this is just on a mental kingdom, you know, that he's the lord over that kingdom. He'll try to fight with that person and make sure that he doesn't take over his mental kingdom, just in a way that's completely similar to the way that people deal with physical kingdoms, you know, fighting to protect in that way. So everyone has their kingdoms, and that's what everyone tries to do. Some people can establish a whole country as their kingdom. Some people can, and people try for world domination as their kingdom. Or some little people try for just, you know, if they have a little room, at least this is my kingdom. And it's true in the animal kingdoms. They have their, you know, they have their little areas that are theirs, like the dogs. Yesterday we saw such a foolish dog. He was riding in the car, but I think the master was more foolish than the. He wasn't driving the car anyway, at least that. But he was in the back seat of the car. He was a Dalmatian, either that or he was a white dog that was very dirty. Dalmatians, you know, Dalmatians have spots, have black spots on them. So either he was a white dog that had went through a mud puddle, or he was a Dalmatian, and he was sitting in the back seat of the car, and every single car that went by, the car is driving along, and he was barking in every single car, because I guess he was thinking that my master doesn't know what important service I'm doing, protecting her from all these different cars going on. But the poor master was
sitting in the front seat,
and the dog was barking so loudly.
And
and just barking and barking and barking, and trying to put at every car. So this is he had his kingdom. Imagine, he was imagining that the whole road was his kingdom, and these other cars had the nerve to impinge upon his kingdom or his master's kingdom. So, I mean, you know, it sounds so foolish, but I mean, am I that different, really? Except that I think I'm the master instead of the servant of my master, like the dog was thinking. So Bhumidevi was just lamenting to see how these foolish kings, look at, they fight each other. You know, they're the powerful ones, and they're just fighting each other continuously, killing each other to gain supremacy. The powerful king, so a king is powerful, and then there's another king who's more powerful than that king, and that king is lording it over that king. Have you ever been to in Jaipur that what is it, Ajmer? Have you ever been there? 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 It's this huge fort on the top of a hill. So, because the Rajasthanis always made their forts on the top of hills, because there were so many different Rajput kings. And then they had to fight and protect themselves against the Muslims too, etc. But they had to protect themselves continuously. So it's so huge and so big. And then you think of, well, boy, look what he did, such a great accomplishment. But the cost of him doing that was incredible. Not the physical cost, but the way they did that, they'd take over other kingdoms and just make everyone slaves and make them do all the work. That, you know, there was no minimum wage, there was no Saturdays and Sundays off. There was no dole. You know, they just merciless and foolish. And then some bigger king comes along and takes them off, or time takes away everything. It's just a matter of time. So they're fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting, and that's what Bhumi Devi is. She's laughing in a sarcastic manner. And she says, well, they're so foolish, don't they see that no one's kingdom has survived, that everyone's kingdom comes and goes, and yet they're still fighting to get a kingdom? They're so foolish. And not only that, and this was the point that came up, they're thinking now, how am I going to pass this kingdom onto my heirs, my sons? And then the purport it explains, they don't even know where they're going, and they're worried about passing it on. They may become as Prabhupada once he said and didn't say at the same time. He said, Nehru, Prabhupada was so clever. He said, an astrologer said that Nehru became the second dog of a in his next life of somebody in Europe. I can't remember what country.
Sweden.
The second dog, not even the prime dog, the second dog. So they don't know where they're going. Mm-hmm. But then in India they talk about the Gandhi dynasty, the Nehru dynasty. But if he's the second dog of somebody in Sweden, you know, and his dynasty had succeeded once, and he's the second dog, that means the big dog is always, he's afraid of the big dog. He doesn't get the same food as the big dog gets. And the master comes and you have to wag your tail, you know, just hoping that'll give you some scraps. So Bhumi Devi is lamenting how the foolishness of it. And this is the mystification or the bewilderment was the right word, obfuscating, covering the reality, which is clear and obvious for everyone, covering reality so that no one can see it, even though it's right in front of everyone, unescapably true, but no one can see it. That's like sometimes you're looking for something. You know, you can't find your glasses or your pen or your keys or your mobile phone or something like that, and then you're looking, can't find it, and then you see, oh, it was there all along, right in front of you. Has that ever happened to you? 100 times. You too, even. You too. So what does that mean? That it's right there and you can't see it. What does that mean? That we're all hypnotized. We're all hypnotized. Bewildered. And who's the bewildering agent? If it happens to everyone, there must be a very strong bewildering agent. You know why that happens?
Is it because we are so focused on some other thing, like the mind is occupied with some other thing that we cannot see?
But even though you're looking for it, yeah, too, that's, which you wouldn't think that was the case, maybe, because your mind's looking for it and still you can't see it. So, what's the answer? Maybe Krishna wants to humiliate us. Again. So, and again. So the result was that Brahma himself was mystified. Just as one who wants to kill another may himself be killed. In other words, Brahma was defeated by his own attempt. Because in the word is vimohita swamayam. His own maya. Sammohayan Vishnum. He wanted to bewilder Vishnu, who is Vishwamohanam, who is the one who bewilders the universe. Vimoham Swayaiva. In this way, Swayam Eva Vimohitam. He himself was certainly bewildered. So he was bewildered and he was minimized. And there's going to be some examples that show this. But he was minimized. Just like the ability, the example will be given later of a little, one of those bugs that light up, do they have those at birth? No. Huh? The glow, the bugs that fly around and have little light bulbs attached to them. Do they have those in Bengal?
No.
Oh, in Vrindavan, I don't think they have them, yes. New Zealand, do they have them?
They have glowworms.
Yeah. So the glowworm, you think, oh, this is amazing. The glow of this little worm is giving off light. Wow, how cool. But then in the daytime, if he tries to show off in the daytime, he can't. His light is non-existent. So rather than that glorifying him by his showing off, it minimizes him. His whatever little he has is made to appear in less. So that's what happened with Brahma. In that sense, he was defeated by his own mystic power, by his own attempt. So in other words, Brahma was defeated by his own attempt. In a similar position are the scientists and philosophers who want to overcome the mystic power of Krishna. They challenge Krishna, saying, what is God? We can do this and we can do that. So what's something wonderful that the scientists can do? They can make great computers, they can make mobile phones, they can make big bombs and create weapons. They're going to have robot armies and drones that fly around. They have drones that they just come down and kill anyone like that. So now it's in the hand of the good guys, the Americans. And they can just get the bad guys, the Taliban leaders, things like that. But wait, when the Taliban leaders use this on the American president, then everyone's going to be outraged. How could they have done this? This is not proper. But where did they learn how to do it from? So it's just Kali Yuga. It's just bad. Bad getting worse. And it's always under the guise, and that's the bewildering power of Krishna. The propaganda is always how things are always improving and we're making progress. That's always the mood, how we're moving forward. Because before my phone was only 3G and now it's 4G. But the more they challenge Krishna in this way, the more they're implicated in suffering. It's all reversed. And the thing, and the Prabhupada says this in different places, that the cure for a problem is worse than the problem itself. So in this way, it all goes on. The lesson here, so everyone listen very carefully, because I've been talking and talking in Prabhupada's and then say what the lesson is. So be very attentive. The lesson here is what?
One has to be humble.
Huh?
One has to be humble.
Yes, exactly. But on the positive side, is that we should not try to overcome Krishna. A humble person will not try to overcome Krishna. But listen to this. Rather, instead of endeavoring to surpass him, to do things in a better way, instead of endeavoring to surpass him, we should surrender to him. Pretty simple. Krishna has said this before. Instead of endeavoring to surpass him in Krishna's way of doing things, and that's why Prabhupada was in the last year of his life, he said 50% of my work is still left incomplete. I want to establish Vanashrama and teach them how to live off the land. And that was the other 50%. This is because this is Krishna's methodology of life, how to live a proper life. Because so much of our time we spend criticizing the karmis and the way they do things in modern civilization. But then And then when we, and then if someone would say, well, how do you live? And then if you're always criticizing, but what's, how do you say you, we should live? What do you say? And then all we can do, more or less, is point to, you know, it's in the books. But if we could only demonstrate, if we could only demonstrate that, the preaching would be 50% better. It would be powerful. If we could demonstrate how people could be, live in a very healthy, happy, satisfied way, in a self-sufficient way, without having going hours and hours to work, back and forth and back and forth, and having to tolerate having a boss. Do you have a nice boss?
It's all right.
Yeah, it's all right. Did you ever have a bad boss?
Yeah, I did. Not that bad.
Okay. Did you ever have a bad boss? No, not so bad. Did you ever have a bad boss? What was it like to have a bad boss?
He just makes life miserable. He just wants to establish his authority. And like, regardless of what you do, if you do this, he will say that, like, that's a mistake. If you do that, then he will say, again, that's a mistake. So if you do this, you are again going to be yelled at. And if you do that, you are again going to be yelled at.
How long did you last in that job?
8 months to 9 months. It was my first job.
It was your first job. And you were always thinking, when will I have my second job? Yes? And you finally got out. So, instead of defeating Krishna, Brahma himself was defeated, for he could not understand what Krishna was doing. Since Brahma, the chief person with this universe, was so bewildered, what is to be said of so-called scientists and philosophers? Savadamam Pratyaja Mamekam Saranam Braja. We should give up our tiny effort to defy the arrangement of Krishna. Instead, whatever arrangements he proposes, we should accept. This is always better, for this will make us happy. The more we try to defeat the arrangement of Krishna, the more we become implicated in Krishna's maya. Daivyesha guna mayi mama maya dharateya. What does that mean?
This divine energy of mine. This energy of mine is very strong.
Difficult to overcome. But, you know, basically, dratya, you cannot overcome this material energy. The more we become implicated in Krishna's maya when we try to defeat the arrangement of Krishna. But one who has reached the point of surrendering to the instructions of Krishna, mameveye papadyante, is liberated, free from Krishna maya, mayam etan tarantite. The power of Krishna is just like a government that cannot be overcome. First of all, there are laws. Then there is the police power. And beyond that, there is military power. Therefore, what is the use of trying to overcome the power of the government? Similarly, what is the use of trying to challenge Krishna? From the next verse, it is clear that Krishna cannot be defeated by any kind of mystic power. If one gets even a little power of scientific knowledge, one tries to defy God. But actually, no one is able to bewilder Krishna. When Brahma, the chief person within the universe, tried to bewilder Krishna, he himself was bewildered and astonished. This is the position of the conditioned soul. Brahma wanted to mystify Krishna, but he himself was mystified. The word Vishnum is significant in this verse. Vishnu pervades the entire material world, whereas Brahma merely occupies one subordinate post. Yasyaika nivasita kala matavalambya jivanti loma vilaja jagannandanata. The word nata, which refers to Lord Brahma, is plural because there are innumerable universes and innumerable Brahmas. Brahma is but a tiny force. What are you thinking as I'm reading this? Anyone brave enough to say? Yeah. Oh, anyone thinking something that's sensible enough?
How small I am.
Yeah.
Comparison.
If Brahma, that's the point Prabhupada's making, if Brahma is just that tiny force, and he's bewildered by when he tries to do something outside of Krishna's desire, then what to speak of? Kamutya Nyaya, what to speak of? This was exhibited in Dwarka when Krishna called for Brahma. One day, when Brahma came to see Krishna in Dwarka, the doorman, at Lord Krishna's request, asked, "Which Brahma are you?" Later, wow, what an insult. What an embarrassment. You know, there's a knock on the door. Who is it? Brahma.
Which one?
Which Brahma are you? Of course it wasn't contemporary and gross like that, but which Brahma? Don't you know who I am? Because this is what this is when you have a position, this tends to be what happens if you have power. You start thinking that everyone should know, and everyone, if they don't know, there's something wrong with them or something. So Brahma replied, four-headed Brahma, that's how he defined himself. So later, when Brahma inquired from Krishna, when I was coming, you know, the doorman asked, I said, "I was Brahma, I've come to see you." And you said, "Which Brahma?" The doorman said, "Does that mean that there's more Brahmins?" Krishna smiled when Brahma asked this question, and at once called for many Brahmas from many universes. The four-headed Brahma of this universe then saw innumerable other Brahmas coming to see Krishna and offer their respects. Some of them had 10 heads, some had 20, some had 100, and some had 1,000,000 heads. Upon seeing this wonderful exhibition, the four-headed Brahma became nervous and began to think of himself as no more than a mosquito in the midst of many elephants. Therefore, what can Brahma do to bewilder Krishna? Why did he get nervous?
Million-headed Brahma, he saw so many Brahma.
Yeah, but why did he get nervous?
Because his position was threatened.
Because when one is confronted with power, one starts feeling, it's just natural to feel frightened. 1,000,000-headed Brahma. Now that's a lot of heads.
Wonder how you can manage all the different thoughts that goes in those million
heads. We have trouble just with one, yes, figuring it out. Just imagine.
You can't chant with one head, so how can you chant with 1,000,000 heads?
But because all those heads mean he's so intelligent, so he didn't have the problems that we have. Just imagine it. You get so much trouble. Let's go this way. Let's go shopping. No, I want to go for a drive. No. 1,000,000 different voices inside. But we're like that also, isn't it? We have so many heads, so many little people, voices inside telling us to do different things. We're little mosquito, the mosquito versions. He began to think of himself as no more than a mosquito in the midst of many elephants. Therefore, what can Brahma do to bewilder Krishna? And the next verse, the example. As the darkness of snow on a dark night and the lightness of a glowworm in the light of day have no value, the mystic power of an inferior person who tries to use it against persons of great power is unable to accomplish anything. Instead, the power of that inferior person is diminished. Purport: when one wants to supersede a superior power, one's own inferior power becomes ludicrous, ridiculous, absurd. Just as a glowworm in the daytime and snow at night have no value, Brahma's mystic power became worthless in the presence of Krishna. for greater mystic power condemns inferior mystic power. On a dark night, the darkness produced by snow has no meaning. The glowworm appears very important at night, but in the daytime its glow has no value. Whatever little value it has is lost. Similarly, Brahma became insignificant in the presence of Krishna's mystic power. Krishna's Maya was not diminished in value, but Brahma's Maya was condemned. Therefore, one should not try to exhibit one's insignificant opulence before a greater power. And then here's where it starts really getting exciting. So Brahma, what happened? What was the cause of this Brahma's confusion? He had taken the boys and taken the calves. Then he had come back and saw that the boys and calves were there. And then he also saw that the boys and calves that he had taken were still where he had placed them. And they were still with Krishna. So then, as he looked on at the boys and calves that were with Krishna, all the calves and boys tending them immediately appeared to have complexions the color of bluish rain clouds and to be dressed in yellow silken garments. Purport. Well, Brahma was contemplating, all the calves and boys immediately transformed into Vishnumurtis, having bluish complexions and wearing yellow garments. Brahma was contemplating his own power and the immense unlimited power of Krishna, but before he could come to a conclusion, he saw this immediate transformation. So as he was thinking about it, he saw those boys and calves turn into Lord Vishnu, each and every one of them, and there were so many of them. The number of calves right in the beginning of the 12th chapter when they were going out in the morning, they're called Asankhya, which could mean basically means uncountable number of them. And each and every one of them, plus the uncountable number of boys, turned into four-armed Vishnu forms, and each of them was wearing yellow silken garments, and its complexion was like... bluish rain cloud. All those personalities had forearms holding conch shell disc. Yes. Lotus flowers in their hands. They wore helmets on their heads, earrings on their ears, and garlands of forest flowers around their necks. On the upper portion of the right side of their chest was the emblem of the goddess of fortune. What is that called?
Shivat.
Furthermore, they wore armlets on their arms, the Kastuba gem around their necks, which represents all the living entities, which were marked with three lines like a conch shell, and on their wrists there were bracelets, with bangles on their ankles, ornaments on their feet, and sacred belts around their waist, and rings on their fingers. They all appeared very beautiful. So as he was watching, all this started manifesting right before his eyes. All the Vishnu forms had forearms with conch shell and other articles, but these characteristics are also possessed by those who have attained Sarupya Mukti in Vaikuntha, and who consequently have forms exactly like the form of the Lord. However, these Vishnu forms appeared before Lord Brahma also possessed the mark of Srivats and the Kastubajam, which are special characteristics possessed only by the Supreme Lord Himself. This proves that all these boys and calves were in fact directly expansions of Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, not merely his associates of Vaikuntha. Vishnu himself is included within Krishna. All the opulences of Vishnu are already present in Krishna, and consequently, for Krishna to demonstrate so many Vishnu forms was not actually very astonishing. The Srivats mark is described by the Vaishnava Toshini as being a curl of fine yellow hair on the upper portion of the right side of Lord Vishnu's chest. This mark is not for ordinary devotees. It is a special mark of Vishnu or Krishna. So Krishna, this little boy who was wandering without any shoes on through the fields of Vrindavan, looking for the calves and holding in his left hand the yogurt and rice and different condiments and foods and pickles between his fingers, suddenly Brahma could understand that these cows, calves and boys, as they started manifesting their Vishnu form, because again he was testing this little coward boy to see his position, what he was. And then he got a glimpse of what he was. And there's more. So this is just to say what they looked like. They were so elegantly decorated. But also, it's not just a decoration. They're giving off they have power. They have unlimited power. When one is, you know what the you've heard the word charisma? Do you know what it means?
Someone is attractive.
Attractive, but it literally means power. So it's you know, we think of it as a sort of an energy emanates from them that attracts us to them, but it's a shakti, it's a power. So these Vishnu forms, each and every one of them, had this unlimited charisma and power emanating from them, and they were all decorated and effulgent and so beautiful. And ornamented. And every part, listen to this, every part of their bodies, from their feet to the top of their heads, was fully decorated with fresh, tender garlands of tulsi leaves, offered by devotees engaged in worshipping the Lord by the greatest pious activities, namely hearing and chanting.
What's that mean? I mean, did they have the garlands of tulsi around their wrists and ankles?
It's because all the devotees are always offering tulsi to Krishna. So they, and Krishna and the Lord is always accepting them. So therefore he's covered. Well, then that's what it means. He saw it, and Sukadeva was telling. But the idea is that the devotees are always offering tulsi to Krishna, because every offering that's made always has tulsi accompanying it. And everyone in Vaikuntha acknowledges the special position of tulsi, because tulsi has a special capacity to give pleasure to Krishna. But there were tulsi leaves offered by devotees engaged in worshipping the Lord by the greatest pious activity. Buddhi punyavad arpita. So they were. That's how Prabhupada translates this. And then sarva gatreshu, on all the limbs, sarva of the body, were komalai, tender, soft, tulsi nava dhamabi. Angri mastakam, from the feet up to the top of the head. And they offered buddhi punyavad. So who was offering them? Who offered the tulsi? Devotees engaged in the greatest pious activities. Buddhi punyavad. They were punyavad arpita. They were offered by those devotees. And Prabhupada translates the greatest pious activity, worshipping the Supreme Lord by hearing, chanting, and so on. And purport, and then we'll stop here. But the next verse, I'll read the next verse too. No, then maybe even the next ones, but not the purports. Because now it's describing how they were being worshipped and how they were situated. In other words, showing how much potency they had. Actually, we'll stop here. We won't read the purport. Stop, so that's 49. But I'll read just a few more of the verses so we can hear what they looked like. These Vishnu forms, so they're covered by tulsi, that's what we just heard, by their pure smiling, which resembled the increasing light of the moon. So they were They had such a soothing, cooling, satisfying effulgence. And by the sidelong glances of their reddish eyes, they created and protected the desires of their own devotees, as if by the modes of passion and goodness. All beings, both moving and non-moving, from the four-headed Lord Brahma down to the most insignificant living entity, had taken forms and were differently worshipping those Vishnumurtis. Every living entity was worshipping them, according to their respective capacities, with various means of worship, such as dancing and singing. All the Vishnumurtis were surrounded by the opulences, headed by anima siddhis. All the cities were worshipping them. By the mystic potencies, headed by Aja. By the 24 elements for the creation of the material world, headed by the Mahatattva. So everything in existence, all anything that has potency or opulence, and all the devotees were all worshipping these lords, and Brahma is watching them. And there he was thinking, I'll find out who this Krishna is, we'll see what his power is. So he stole them in that mood, trying to test Krishna and provoke Krishna in one sense. And he was thinking, will he do something wonderful? What will he do? Will he go looking for the boys? Will he eventually come to me and ask me where they are? What would he do? So this is what he did. Quite wonderful. Okay, we'll stop here. But we'll continue reading the verses and purports. And Brahma becomes, when he sees all this, the total effect of this on him, he gets completely overwhelmed and very humble. He's gotten a glimpse of the difference between his power and Krishna's power. He's gotten a glimpse. And that glimpse has affected his consciousness so much. In the next chapter, it will come out in wonderful prayers and glorification of Krishna. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
How do we know what's Krishna's plan that we might be trying to define, and what's somehow the, you know, like a challenge that we actually, how do we know? Because it's not like we're just impurely advanced at this point. So there's something that are good.
So, I mean, there's obviously many angles to answer that question. And if we, if we're on the order and service, if we're in service, we know that on the order of Prabhupada and spiritual masters, then as representatives, we know that that's Krishna's plan, and this, or we could say Krishna's desire, but we don't know always what part we are going to play in it. So we try our best, but we know that in a general way, that fulfilling that desire is part of the plan. We also don't, even Prabhupada couldn't know exactly what Krishna's plan was, what Krishna's desire was when he came to the West, and he saw that Krishna was reciprocating, and Prabhupada took Krishna's reciprocation and tried to go as far as he possibly could with it, and for as long as he could. So so that's on a bigger level in one sense, and a more general level. So how do we know if something is Krishna's plan, if we're going against Krishna's plan? So this is the part that's obviously most interesting and most tricky, because we don't know always. And in the Juhu temple, the devotees did some things, and it appeared that, you know, to be almost losing it. And Prabhupada said, and the devotees said to Prabhupada, "Must be Krishna's plan." And Prabhupada replied, "No, it is your foolishness." But he said it with a lot more force, I'm sure. So he knew that But at one point he was ready to accept, okay, it might not be what Krishna wanted with Juhu, but then by Krishna's arrangement, it turned. So you don't always know, so you try your best, and when you see that it, when you see, if you see it's working, then you know that it's Krishna's plan. If you see it's not working, you keep trying and trying and trying, and you know, because you think it's Krishna's plan, and you're consulting with those trusted seniors, etc., and they say, yes, it's good, so keep on trying, and then and you use your intelligence and you consult with others as best you can, and then ultimately you have to, if it's not working, you say, must be, you have to be detached and think that there must be another part of Krishna's plan, or sometimes it's just time, timings aren't right too. So maybe Krishna's plan for 4 years from now. We saw that with Prabhupada too, that he had the desire to do something in the service of his Guru Maharaj, but the time wasn't right until he was so senior, elderly. Time wasn't right. And then when it was right, it moved inconceivably fast. So as we go about our little day, our you know, our life and our in our little world, we try our best, we consult, and we have to be detached from the results, and we have to be ready to adjust. Yes? Is this a good question? You're welcome.
How Brahma felt when the other Brahmas came?
Because they were so powerful, and there were so many of them. And he had, before seeing them, he thought that, well, I'm the control of the universe, and no one in the whole universe, that's millions and billions and billions and billions of other souls, are as intelligent as I am. I'm the only one who knows how it works. The whole universe works. So he was feeling a little bit proud, thinking I'm so wonderful. But when he saw so many millions and millions and millions of other Brahmas, and some of them so much more powerful and bigger and more intelligent than himself, he felt very, very, very little. Before he thought himself very, very big. But when he saw these other Brahmas who were all paying their respects to Krishna, they were all bowing down to Krishna, every one of them, but some of them were so big and so powerful, and he felt himself like a mosquito. You know how a mosquito feels? But we can understand a mosquito is very, very weak, because, you know, did you ever see
it? Mosquito doesn't feel weak.
He felt himself as if he was a mosquito amongst so many elephants. Because mosquitoes, if you take an elephant, they're so powerful and so thick and so strong. They, you know, if they run into a building, the building will fall down practically. But a mosquito is so delicate. Its legs and everything is so delicate. If you just go like this a little bit, if you just even try to catch them and to put them out very gently, the legs and wings and everything are so delicate and fragile, and they can easily break and die. So Brahma felt himself as if he was as strong as a mosquito compared to the most powerful elephant. So he felt himself, he felt very humble, and he felt, oh, I'm so little and insignificant. And he figured, because if a mosquito with elephants around, if they just rub against the wall and the mosquito is there, the mosquito will so easily be crushed. So Brahma felt nervous to be around all those big Brahmas when he was just a little Brahma. Is that okay? Do you want to feel like a mosquito in the midst of so many elephants? No, I also don't. But yet it is true. Think of what you are good at. But then think of how many people in existence are better at that same thing than you. And if they all were in the same room, and you know you were proud because you had just done something on your ability, and then all these thousand-headed, million-headed experts came in, and then you had to speak. You're so nervous because you're, what she's saying, you're out of your league. Your capacity is so small compared to their capacity. So you feel very embarrassed, humble. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Brahma ki jai, Brahma Vamohanalila ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai.